Morning, everyone. It is Friday, the 15th of July, end of another week. Morning, Henry. You're on overnight for us. What have you got?
Well, unfortunately, Ben, it was a bit of a wild session on the US markets. A lot of volatility. Late rally saved some blushes, but it's not really saving us today. We did have the Dow closing down 143 points, but did have a low of 630-odd down as recession fears and interest rate fears gripped the market. We also saw a couple of US banks report last night, which weren't particularly good. A little bit of a gloomy outlook, especially from Jamie Dimon, as is his modus operandi at the moment. The Nasdaq was up on the back of falling yields in the US, and the US dollar remains very, very, very strong. So that's really hurt commodities last night. We had nickel, the worst of the bunch, down 8.7%. Copper not doing quite so badly, only down 2.5%. And lead sank like the proverbial, down 6.5%. Oil pretty much unchanged. Gold off as well. So no good news for us. And the big move was in iron ore, which is pushing below $100 a ton on Dalian futures this morning. So we are seeing some big losses in our iron ore stocks. US banks were also easier across the board, around 2.5-3%, and that is affecting our banks as well. So not a pretty end to the week. We're currently down around 105 points, just for your information.
Give that, Henry. Tom, we know we're down 105 points. What else is happening today in the local market?
Thank you, Ben. Well, we are on track to finish more than 1.8% lower for the week. Healthcare and consumer staples, the only sectors in positive territory. Miners and financials dragging the market lower. Rio down 4%. They've warned on profit as costs rise and iron ore prices fall. Fortescue and BHP both down sharply as well. BHP also has production numbers due on Monday, so Rio setting the scene a bit there. Pendle Group, PDL, they've had their FUM update down 5% on sliding funds. Jumbo Interactive, JIN, down 8% with profit falling short of expectations. WiseTech Global, one of the only improvers, up 6%, upgraded guidance. We do have Chinese GDP out at midday, and the US has retail sales and industrial production due tonight, Ben.
Great work. Thank you, Tom. Layden, what have you got out of the brokers?
Thank you, Ben. So Credit Suisse has reviewed its base metals coverage this morning. The broker anticipates that copper and nickel prices will fall as the market is oversupplied, and they've downgraded 29 metals. That's 29M is the code for that one. Oz Minerals, that's OZL, and Sandfire Resources, that's SFR. They've all been downgraded to underperform, and their target prices have dropped quite considerably as well. The target price for 29 metals falls 59.7% to $1.15, which is about 8% below the current market price. Oz Minerals' target is 35% lower to $13, which is 23% below the current market price. And Sandfire Resources' target falls 55.7% to $2.70, which is 29% below the current share price. But they have upgraded Evolution Mining to neutral, but the target price did come down slightly to $2.50, but it's still 6% above the current share price. Thank you, Ben.
And Monday will be interesting to see what they say about WiseTech.
Very nice. Thank you, Layton. Henry, back to you. What have you got in Henry's tech?
Thanks, Ben. Just in my stuff today, I had a request on the Facebook group looking at Reliance Worldwide, which is a plumbing supply company. Their headline product is a thing called SharkBite, which is a way of connecting copper piping. Very big in the US, UK, and APAC as well. So just having a little look at that. It has been suffering, as have a lot of building product companies, as the slowdown in housing with rising interest rates. So it has been under a little bit of pressure. No reason to suspect that is going to change. They've got the results out at the end of August. The stock's eased a bit today. Certainly no reason to be charging into that one, although it is towards the bottom end of its PER range. So that is a good thing. And certainly relative to others, it's not looking too bad. But yeah, no reason to be jumping into that one. Also looking at, I had a phone call yesterday from a great mate of mine who I used to work with back in the dim, dark days, talking about a small cap stock that is much overlooked in an industry that is seen as a dinosaur industry, and it pays around 8.5% fully franked yield, and it does have a pretty diverse and very dominant position in that industry. So I'm going to have a little look at that one next week. Part of the problem is that no one believes the dividend is sustainable, although they have been paying the same dividend for 5 years, and they are increasing their profitability and the competition is dying away. So that is good. There's not a lot of liquidity in the stock either, so that is another drawback, and that's part of the reason why he phoned me, because he's hoping to try and increase the level of interest from retail investors, but it looks an interesting one. So I'll have a little look at that one next week. And also I did a little thing today on the RBA and what the RBA's charter actually is and what its mantra is in terms of what it should be doing. And the 2 to 3% inflation target is one thing that they actually made up themselves rather than what they actually have in their charter, which is pretty much dominated by jobs growth and stability, all of which we have at the moment. Unfortunately, we do have that inflation, but whether putting rates up will cure that remains to be seen. But I thought I'd just include a few thoughts on that for the weekend. And that is about it from me today, Ben.
It's good stuff there. Thank you, Henry, for our fresh ideas. Chris, so you're chomping at the bit to get yours out.
Thank you, Ben. Yes, I'm taking a look at Medibank Private this morning. There's just a handful of things that insurers need to do well. They need to write a lot of premiums, they need to manage their expenses, and they need to invest those premiums well. Fortunately, Medibank Private, stock code MPL, has been doing all of them well of late. So through COVID and post-COVID, take-up of private health insurance actually grew. So they have been able to write a lot of premiums. At the same time, a lot of procedures, particularly expensive elective surgery, weren't able to be conducted, of course. So they haven't had to pay out a lot either. So that's helped with their cost control. And then in terms of the investment, well, we know markets have rolled over recently and have been a little bit difficult, but they had been quite good, particularly the markets that they invest in. So all of the three elements have performed pretty well. And the expectation is that they will report quite well in the upcoming reporting season. That is reflected in a lot of the brokers' ratings and price targets. Targets anywhere from 5 to 10% above the current market price. Or without forms or overweights, pretty much up and down the board. So it's a buy for me. It's just broken higher technically as well. There was an important swing point at $3.30. That has just been cleared. I'm looking at an upside target of around $3.80. So it might be a bit of a slow grind getting up there. And certainly things shaping up well for Medibank Private.
Has it got a yield, Chris?
It certainly does, Marcus. It has a yield of 3.9%, 5.4% grossed up.
Fabulous.
Very nice. Thank you, Chris. Tom, you've got a fresh idea as well.
I do. I'm looking at Goodman Group, GMG. JP Morgan yesterday updated its view on the oversold property sector. So that's brought it back into the spotlight a bit. Brokers on the whole are quite bullish. The average price target suggesting upside of 20%. The idea or theory at play is that as bond yields fall, valuations tend to rise in the property sector. And that's what's currently happening. GMG up 10% in the last month with 10-year yields in the US and Australia off between 50 and 60 bips. And Leighton made a really good chart that does a great job of showing that inverse relationship. So when bond yields top out, Goodman Group sort of bottomed. And they upgraded guidance in May. Results on August 16. It's a defensive company. Technical picture is improving and is likely to see more upside as bond yields come off and this recession fears outweigh inflation fears.
Yield of 1.6%.
Not massive yield, but there is something there.
Thank you for that, Tom. And I've had a bit of a look at AGL Energy, AGL stock, this morning as well. As a boring stock, it's always labelled. It's up 30% this year. So I had a look at that, why that's been happening. And it was certainly a boring stock until about 2016, where it went sideways for about 10 years. But then it jumped up to 27 pretty quickly, and then it's tumbled all the way down. It hit lows of $5.
It's down 60% in 3 years.
Yeah, and it's now sitting at $8. Long story short, there's a few interesting things at play, including the interest from Mike Cannon Brooks and Brookfield Invest Asset Management Company, interested in the takeover there. But long story short, it's a boring company with risks present. So I think if you're looking for a boring company, there's better options. If you're looking for some risks, there's better options. And before Marcus even turns around and tells me the yield, I can tell you it's got currently a 3.2% yield. 3.1% yield. That's projected to move up to around 5.5 next year.
5.6.
But even that, if you're looking for yield, there's probably better options. So not to say that it can't keep tracking up, but it's not given a whole lot of reasons to get overly excited.
No franking.
Yes. So that's my take there. Marcus, what have you got for strategy?
I got distracted today with an email from a member asking me when this resources bottom happens, because I've written about a fabulous buying opportunity coming up. This resources bottom comes, what do I buy, BHP or Rio? So I've written a section on that. Have a look. The obvious thing about BHP and Rio is after the merger of the petroleum business into Woodside, they have very similar commodity exposures. You have a bigger copper exposure at BHP, a bigger aluminium exposure at Rio. Otherwise, very similar. But 60% of both have revenue from China and revenue from iron ore, and that's obviously the driver. And both are sensitive. If you read their last results announcements, both are very sensitive to the iron ore price. A $10 move in the iron ore price will move BHP's profit by 6%. So very significant sensitivities to commodity prices, and that, of course, is what drives the price. You look at the PEs and yields, they look absolutely fantastic. Yields in the over 10%, PEs under 10, in fact, down at 7 and 5. But I can tell you for nothing, ignore the fundamentals, ignore broker advice as well, because it's often based on fundamentals. The fundamentals are fabulous at the right times, but the share prices are led by the future of commodity prices. So as now, as commodity prices come off, the share price will come off, doesn't matter what the yield is, what the PE is. And both are clearly sensitive to the same things with tiny wee little differences. So the question, which one would I buy come the recovery in commodity prices, as soon as the stock market starts to look through the cycle to the other side, and it will do that in advance of the economic cycle. Both these stocks will obviously bottom at the same time. And I think the question is not which one is best. They're both very similar. That's not going to make a difference to your fortune. What will make a difference to your fortune is timing either of them. And if you look at the 10-year total return from BHP and Rio compared to the market, it's very similar. You could hold one or both of them, but I imagine most of you will stick with the big Australian rather than the big pommy Australian. And that's the conclusion. But have a read of the section. It'll show you some of the differences. The other obvious thing is when you start to look at their websites and their histories and go back to the 1800s where Rio bought the Rio Tinto copper mines that had been started by the Greeks and Romans, and they became the biggest copper producer in the world by introducing new techniques. When you go back to that sort of history, you begin to realize these are phenomenal companies. They will survive every cycle. If you're a long-term investor worrying about the share price falling now, don't. Just go and have a read of the annual reports and realize how important these companies are to the world, and you will relax. And as far as timing this commodity price cycle, it's just been cute, but you don't need to worry about these companies in the long term. So both fabulous companies, and I think a fabulous buying opportunity is coming up as well. Other things in strategy today, I haven't quite finished, but just looking at those JP Morgan results, share price down 3.6% on results that were down 28% in a quarter. And this is Jamie Dimon, of course, as Henry said, who is the guy that was talking about a hurricane coming. And he talks about why the results were poor. And one of the main things he talks about is the never before seen end of quantitative easing or quantitative tightening, in other words. And that just highlights that money printing was an absolute bonanza for the investment banks, and it has come to an end. And at the same time, you've got this spike in interest rates, and you have the asset markets coming off, and you have the pipeline of IPOs, M&A, capital raisings drying up. It's the perfect storm for investment banks at the moment. And all that says to me is there is another fabulous buying opportunity coming up as everything's going wrong at the same time for them. And this is the first time we're really hearing about it. I can't imagine the other investment banks will do any better. But for us, I've put an interesting chart in the strategy piece, which is JP Morgan's share price compared to Macquarie. And the two of them are highly correlated. And so for us, the opportunity is going to come in Macquarie Bank. Obviously not yet, though. Otherwise, a couple of bits of admin. If you haven't heard it already, this podcast is going behind the paywall as of the end of this month. And we have our education seminars coming up in Melbourne on the 25th. So that's just over a week away. And in Sydney on the 1st of August, I will be sending out some details to anyone who's coming. I'll be sending out some details and a quick survey to people at the beginning of next week to warm you up for that. Should be good.
Very nice. Thank you, Marcus. Looking forward to them. Our question of the day today, what is the coolest place you've ever been to, Tom?
Coolest place was actually quite hot. It was the Galapagos Islands, just off the coast of Ecuador. Very cool.
Pretty cool place. Leighton?
I was expecting somewhere in South Australia. So
South Australia, also great.
Yeah. Mine is not as exciting as that, but Single Fin in Bali. In Uluwatu, really, really cool place. On the cliff, looking out over the water, sunset, very nice.
Okay, that's the end of the surfer answers. Chris?
Machu Picchu for me, and there's a place called the Sun Gate, which is actually a higher peak than Machu Picchu, and you've got to hike up there, and they time it so that the sun is shining on Machu Picchu as you get to the Sun Gate in the evening. It's the most spectacular thing I've ever seen. So,
Henry?
Beach club in Amalfi, I have to say, in Italy, would be probably the coolest. I wasn't the coolest, but there were a lot of very cool people. Fortunately, I wasn't one of them.
Yeah, Amalfi is a very cool place.
It is.
Marcus?
In the cockpit of my dad's Hawker Hunter trainer at Valley Anglesey in England, where he took me up for a flight, and he was a pilot instructor at Valley. Anyone in the RAF will know Valley Anglesey is where they do their pilot training. And I look back on that and wonder that I didn't spend more time with my dad and on those RAF bases. He was always away, but I did get one moment in a cockpit with him.
That's very cool.
That's very cool too. I would put mine in Iceland up there. I don't know what the place is called. Even if I did know it, I wouldn't be able to pronounce it. But up the West Coast, we drove up and we stayed in an Airbnb that was looking out over the water, had a full wall window over the water. And on the other side of water was a dormant volcano. So you just sit there, have a cup of tea and take that in. So that was a very cool place.
That sounds awesome.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend. Marcus, you'll be on deck tomorrow morning.
I certainly will.
So everyone can look forward to that. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
I was playing golf at the weekend with one of my friends who has been listening to our morning meeting podcast for free for the past year, and he was looking a bit sad. And the reason he was looking a bit sad is because from the 1st of August, the Marcus Today morning meeting podcast is going dark. We are putting it behind the paywall. It'll be for members only. Anyone who wants to continue listening to the Marcus Day Morning Meeting podcast should do themselves a favour and us a favour and subscribe. And just to tickle you along, if you send an email to info@marcustoday.com.au and be very nice to Will, Chi-Chi and Karishma, they may just give you a bit of a promo code. Give it a go.